everyone. Welcome to the Hoboken Grace Podcast. We hope today's message inspires you on your walk with God and supports you in a weekly rhythm of connecting with Him. We want to help you in that, so every message from every week is available live and on demand on our app or at hobokengrace.com. Thank you for choosing to spend time with us, and we'll see you next week.
Excellent. Well, good morning and welcome. If I haven't had a chance to meet you, my name is Chris. I'm lead pastor here at Hoboken Grace. And I know some of you are looking at my face and saying, where have you been? And the reality is I was in Florida, but I didn't get sunburnt in Florida. I actually got sunburnt yesterday in New Jersey while I was coaching my son's baseball games. I don't know about you, but I'm celebrating this weather. I know some of you aren't. You're the same people who a couple weeks ago were complaining that it's too cold. I don't know what to do for you. You should probably just move to San Diego or something. You'd probably just complain that the weather never changes there. So I don't know that there's hope for you. But as we come together today, for the last several weeks, we've been in the midst of this conversation, Break Free. And on Easter morning, we began to dive into this, and we looked at the mission statement of Jesus. As he launches his public ministry, he says, okay, this is what I'm here for. This is what I'm about. It says this, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me, for he's anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim that the captives will be released, that the blind will see, that the oppressed will be set free, and that the time of the Lord's favor has come. He says, this is what I'm here for. I'm here to bring freedom. I want for you to be able to see. I want for you to be released from whatever would hold you captive. He says, this is what I'm here for. And then on Easter morning, he walks out of that tomb and says, I want you to understand, I know the way to life. Earlier, he had said it this way. He says, the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. He says, I understand the way to life. I've even conquered death. I know how to lead you to life. Not just that you're breathing, but that you're alive, that you're engaging life fully, that you're experiencing life fully. He says, I know the way to that. And so from the beginning, from Easter morning, we've been asking this question, how? Jesus, if you can do that, if you know how to do that, if this is what you came for, how? What does that look like? And we saw in Romans how it begins with a relationship. Romans 10, chapter 9 says this, that if you confess with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. He says, if you want to experience what Jesus came to do, he says, it begins here. And I've said this over and over and over again. I hope that this is ingrained in your mind as we walk through this. This is not a reality statement. This is not a reality statement. This is not just saying, okay, I believe that that's true. No, this is a relationship statement. You are my Lord. You are the Lord of my life. This is a relationship statement. And as Paul's writing to the church of Rome, he says, this is where it begins. You step into this relationship and you say, I understand that you know the way to life. And so you are now my Lord. I follow you. You lead me to where it is that I need to go. Jesus is not a consultant in our lives. Jesus does not consult to life. He brings to life. You follow him there. And so it begins with this relationship. And then all of a sudden, he begins to do all of these things in our lives that bring freedom. And so we look in the next week at the fact that he brings the freedom from the transaction. Every relationship in your life is transactional, except for one. And he steps into your life and says, no, you are loved. Not you might be loved, you could be loved. No, you are loved. And then as we saw the next week, he brings freedom from the penalty. And so he says, you are forgiven. I've paid for everything that would keep you from being with me, from engaging me, from knowing me. You are forgiven. We come and we take communion every week. We go to that table understanding we don't deserve to be invited. And yet he gave his life to buy us back, for us to live every day in the reality that we are forgiven. We're free from all of that. And then we continued and we saw how not only does he do these things externally, but he does something phenomenal internally. And he frees us from who it was that we were. He says, no, you no longer find your identity in your flesh. You no longer find your identity in your actions. No, you are holy. And you are born again. I'm making you new from the inside out. And he begins to do this thing inside of us. And then last week, Anthony so powerfully walked us through this next reality that not only are we free from who we are, but we're free from selfishness. That you're a servant. And you no longer have to live your life trying to watch out for yourself. You no longer have to constantly watch out for you because you know that there's one who does that. There's one who watches out for you so that you can watch out for others. He says, no, you are a servant. And I know for some of you, as we came to this last week, you said, oh, okay, here's the to-do list. Oh, okay, here's the things that we have to do in order to be loved, in order to be free. No. And Anthony touched on this, but I want to reiterate that this is not a condition for the others. And it's so important that we change the way that we look at this, because many of you heard this. You said, oh, that's the right thing to do, or that's what I ought to do. Over the past 6 months, I've become more and more convinced that we have to change the way that we think about this. Because we look at this and we say, okay, God steps into our lives to teach us morality. And God steps into our lives to teach us what's right or what's wrong. But that's not actually the way that God talks about it. That's not actually the way that God talks about it. As God steps into our life, he doesn't say, okay, I want you to do the right thing and avoid the wrong thing. He almost always talks about it this way. He says, there's a path that leads to death and a path that leads to life. And he says, if you go down this path, it actually begins to rob you of life. And he said, I'm not just here to teach you morality. I'm here to teach you reality. I want you to understand how the world works. And if you go down that path, it leads to death. And he almost always talks about that way, death and life, death and life. And this is really important because some of you think about it as right and wrong. Well, I just need to make sure that I do the right thing and avoid the wrong thing. But if you do that, you won't take seriously what Jesus is trying to teach you. And some of you right now are headed down the path to death, and you're looking at it and saying, I'm just taking a wrong turn. But we make wrong turns all the time. Every time I'm in Paramus in that maze of roads, I make a wrong turn. Every time you say, okay, it's going to cost me a little time, but I'll be able to turn around and come back and I'll be fine. And that's why some of you are walking down a path that is going to destroy you. And you think it's no big deal. It's just a wrong turn. I'll turn back around and I'll be fine. And all the while you are dying. And you're being robbed of life. And Jesus says, no, this isn't just about morality, right? No, this is about reality. I want you to understand what you were created to be in, what you were created to be part of. I want you to understand how I formed the world. I want you to understand that the way that you see the world is not the way that the world actually works. And so he doesn't come and say, you need to be a servant because it's the right thing to do. He comes and says, you need to understand. You think that if you give your life to be a servant, that you're not going to have joy. You think if you give your life to be a servant, you're going to be robbed of life. But he says, no, you need to understand. Being a servant is where life is actually found. But you have to change the way that you think about reality. This is one of those ways that we have to transform our minds. No, life is actually found in this. And one of the things that I love is that he doesn't just teach us this. He actually comes and lives it. He says, no, I don't want you to just hear this from me. I want you to see it. And so the God of heaven and earth, the King of kings, comes to serve. Why? Because it was the right thing. No, because that's where life's found. I want for you to understand what it is to be alive, but your idea of reality is flawed. That's why, remember in his mission statement, what's one of the things that he says? He says that the blind will see. He's not talking about physically blind, he's talking about spiritually blind. He says, I want for you to be able to see how life actually works. And I want you to see, if you're on that path, it's going to lead to death. There's a path that leads to death and a path that leads to life. And I know the way to life. He wants for us to understand reality. This is also why, as Paul is writing to the church at Rome, as he's walking them through everything that Jesus has done for them, and I know some of you are here, you say, well, who's Paul? Well, Paul's actually an individual that God used to be able to give us a significant portion of what we'd call the Christian scriptures or the New Testament, those letters that were written after Jesus had come back from the dead. And I know some of you are here today and you don't really like church and you're not really very big on Christians. You'd love Paul because Paul hated Christians. As a matter of fact, he spent the first part of his life trying to kill Christians, and so I'm betting that he hates them more than you, or at least I'm hoping so. But then he actually encounters Jesus, and as he encounters Jesus, everything changes. And he's writing to this church at Rome, and Romans is an interesting book. I hope that you're reading through God's Word. There's so many of us that have opinions about God's Word, but we've never actually read it. I hope that you're taking time to read through it, even if you don't believe it. I know some people say to me, well, I'm not going to read the Bible. I don't believe it's true. I hope you don't read anything because you believe it's entirely true. You didn't pick up Hunger Games because you're like, I think this is true. I hope not. If not, come talk to me afterwards. We have a conversation. But I hope you're reading it. It's a book that changed the world more than any other book. And Romans is a really interesting book. It's written more than any other letter, book inside of scriptures. It's actually written the most from a Western perspective. It's the most like a textbook. And this is because Paul didn't get the chance. Most of the letters that Paul writes in the New Testament, he's actually taught in those churches. He's been there. But Paul didn't get the chance to go to Rome. And Rome's the center of the world. He's so passionate about them knowing what Jesus had done for them. But he hadn't had the chance to go teach there. And so he says, I got to be able to lay out for them exactly what Jesus has done, all that Jesus has made possible. And so he walks them through in an unbelievable way, in an incredibly clear way, in a very deep and expansive way. He walks them through everything that Jesus has done for them, the way that he's given his life for us, the necessity of it. He walks through all of God's grace and God's love. And then he comes to the end of it. He comes to the end of it, and as he wraps that up, he calls them to something in light of it. I want to take you to this passage. It's found in the book of Romans, and it says this in Romans chapter 12. It says, therefore, I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. I believe as God steps into our life, he says, no, I want for you to understand reality. I want for you to understand the way that life really works. And so he doesn't come in and say, listen, therefore, in light of everything that Jesus has done, I want you to do the right thing. No. He calls us to something far more significant than that. He says, in light of everything that Jesus has done for you, I want you to worship. I want you to worship. Now, worship is a weird word. What does it even mean? What does it really even mean to worship something? I don't know that any of us would, if we were asked, would say, well, I worship this. Or maybe we would say it about whoever we believe God to be, but it's not, what does it really mean? It's almost nebulous. It's undefined, which makes it difficult to be able to really wrap our hands around. It's interesting, the definition inside the dictionary says this. It says, worship is to show reverence and adoration for a deity, honor with religious rites. And it gives this example. The Maya built jungle pyramids to worship their gods. It said, worship is to show reverence or adoration. It's to think highly of. It's to praise. Maybe it's to sing songs to. Some of you say, well, I worship because I come and I sing songs. Or maybe the fact that you show up is worship. Maybe the fact that you give is worship. What does it mean? And then you come to the dictionary and it says, well, you have to show reverence for something, or maybe build a pyramid to something, or build something for what you worship. What does it mean? I would argue this. If this is the actual definition of worship, to pay homage to revere, if this is the actual definition of worship, then the translation in Romans 12 is wrong. And they shouldn't use this word. Because what I see in Romans 12 is something far more significant than this. Let me show you what I mean. Let me take you back to that passage. Therefore, in light of everything that Jesus has done for you, I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Hey, Paul, what does worship mean? Well, I think he actually He actually lays it out for us with what he says beforehand. He says, no, I want you to worship. What does that look like? He says, I want for you to offer your bodies as living sacrifices. I want you to give your life to it. To offer your body as a living sacrifice. He says, this is worship. And the reality is that even though we wouldn't say necessarily that we worship something, as we've said from the beginning, all of us have lords that we're following, things that we believe will bring us life. And all of us are chasing different things in order to be able to find life. And so I think all of us actually worship. And I think if you were to define it the best, based on what he says here, and you say, well, what is worship? Well, worship is orienting your life around something. It's orienting your entire life around something. And all of us have these different lords, these different kings that we think will bring us life. And so this is what we do. We orient our life around them. And we wouldn't necessarily use the word, but that's exactly what we do. We orient our entire life around them. And sometimes we do it in crazy ways. Have you ever met those fans that worship their team? They orient their entire life around them. Listen, I'm a huge Giants fan. I'm a massive Yankees fan. I'm very excited with how the team is doing right now. I hope that it continues. But I am never going to show up painted blue and white, okay? I'm not going to mortgage my house in order to be able to buy season tickets. That's not going to happen, okay? But you meet those people and you're like, man, that's crazy. And I know some of you are here and you're that person. You're crazy. And your takeaway today is that you should stop doing that. But we do. We orient our entire life around it. We have these things that we think will bring us life. And so we orient. That's worship. And we do it in all sorts of different ways, with all sorts of different things. And so for some of you, it's your attractiveness. That's what you think is going to bring you life, and it gets you attention. It's going to bring you love. And so you orient your entire life around it. You've never walked past a window that you didn't look in, not so that you could see through it, but so that you could see your reflection back. And you work and you do everything else in your life in order to be able to afford to buy the things that will help you to be able to maintain that. You orient your entire life around it. For others of us, it's our career, and we orient our entire life around our career and how we're going to climb that corporate ladder and how we're going to be successful. You worship it. And there's other things that are part of your life. And they're fine as long as they don't interfere with what you orient your life around. And as long as they help you, which is why some of you, this is why you keep God around, because maybe he can help you to worship what you actually worship. Or maybe you worship a relationship, and so you orient your entire life around that, and you're constantly just looking, okay, how am I going to meet someone, and where's that going to be? You think about it all the time. All the decisions in your life are made based on that. Or maybe you're in a relationship, and you orient your entire life around that relationship, and you think, well, that's a good thing. And sometimes we can do this. We take good things, and then we orient our entire life around them. Listen to me. Nothing will kill a relationship faster than if you orient your entire life around it. Because when you do that, what you do is you suck the life out of the other person because you need it to give you life. I've had more counseling conversations where relationships are broken because someone oriented their life around the relationship than I have counseling conversations where someone didn't care enough about the relationship. You say, no, that's not me. I orient my life around something really good. I orient my life around my kids. Same thing holds true. And some of you grew up in households like that, and your whole life was pressure. Or you grew up with parents who manipulated you to stay close to them because they couldn't lose you. Listen to me. The people I know who've been the most afraid over the last 2 years are those who oriented their life around family. Because if they lost them, they had nothing. And it was crazy because they wouldn't see their family, but they didn't want their family to see anyone else either. They wanted everything to just freeze. Because if they lost them, they'd lose everything. And we orient our lives around these different things. We worship them. And Jesus steps in and says, No, wait. Wait, I know the way to life. And this is a question I've been asking you through the whole thing. Because right now, some of you are thinking through this. You're thinking, okay, well, what is it that I worship? And it's an important question to ask. What is it that you orient your life around? What is it for you? All of us have something. What is it? And then here's my next question. We've asked it time and time again. Can it and does it bring you life? Has it brought you life? Or are you scrambling for control so that you don't lose it? Jesus says, I want you to worship me. I want you to orient your life around me. And I know when I say that, some of you think, you say, wait, that doesn't sound like freedom. That doesn't bring freedom. Wait, and let me take you back to this because it's critical that we understand this. Jesus did not come to free you from having a king. Jesus came to free you from the kings that would rob you of life. Jesus did not come to free you from having a king. No. He came to free you from the kings that would rob you of life. And so he says, I want to invite you to make me your king. I want you to worship me. I want you to orient your life around me. And this is so important because most of us, we walk through life, and this is the question that we're most concerned with. Almost every single one of us in this room, we ask this question over and over, and we have throughout our entire lives, we've been asking this question, and it's shaped what we orient our life around, because we've asked over and over and over again, what is worth living for? What is it that's worth living for? And some of you decided, no, relationships are worth living for. And Celine Dion taught you, love is worth living for. Some of you are too young. You're like, who's Celine Dion? I got to find a different example for the next service. But we ask this question time after time. What is worth living for? Well, a relationship, my career is worth living for. My kids are worth living for. And we're constantly, this is what determines what we shape, what we orient our life around. But I think, listen to me. I think we're asking the wrong question. The question is not what is worth living for. The question is this, what am I alive for? And those two questions are not the same. What am I alive for? And I know that some of you think that you're just an accident, but God has stepped into our lives and said, no, wait. You were created on purpose for a purpose. But we've consumed our lives with this question, what is worth living for? And we've tried to figure out what it is, and we've given our life to it. But you don't find life by chasing these other kings. This leads to all sorts of different lords, all sorts of different kings. And Jesus says, no, what you actually need to know is what you're alive for. And there's only one person who knows the answer to that question. And it's him. There's only one person who knows the answer to that question. It's him. And so he says, I want you to orient your life around me because I can lead you there. I can lead you into. He doesn't consult us into it. He's not going to tell you why, because he's passionate about a relationship with you. He's not interested in you doing it without him. He's not interested in that at all. He says, no, I want for you to follow me into it, but I can show you what you're alive for. What it is that you were created for. But all of us, we keep chasing these things that we think life is worth living for. It's interesting, as I've walked through this, this has been really, really powerful, especially for me as I interact with my son, Cale. And for those of you who don't know, I've got three boys, and my middle son, Cale, was born with Down syndrome. He's actually going to be taking the step of baptism today. And it's unbelievable all that God's done for that to be a reality. But as I walked through this, it struck me that most of the things that we think are worth living for are not things that Cale is going to experience. Cale's never going to be an incredible athlete, although he works very hard at it. I will say, though, in his first baseball game, he hit a grand slam. And then yesterday, he knocked in another run, which, to be honest, my other sons don't appreciate. When he hit the grand slam, my son Cole, who's my youngest, turned to me and said, Dad, I'm never going to hear the end of this. But he's never going to have a thriving sports career. He's never going to be incredible at academics, which he doesn't work hard at. He's never going to climb the corporate ladder. He's probably not going to get married. He'll probably not have kids. So let me ask you, does that mean he'll never be fully alive? Only if he buys into our idols. But if I can help him to orient his life around the one who created him and gave his life for him, he will discover and know why he's alive. And he is not an accident. And he is not a mistake. And there's a reason he's alive. And this is where life is found. And some of you are here, and you think God made a mistake with you. And your whole life you've been told you're not enough. You're not smart enough. You're not pretty enough. You're not whatever it is. Your whole life you've been told you're not enough. And you're not very good at chasing these things. And you haven't been successful at chasing these things. And so you've bought into the idea that you can't actually be alive. But the reality is, you just haven't seen yet why you're alive. And God, before the foundations of the earth, planned a role for you in his story, intentionally for you. And you are perfectly created for it. Perfectly created for it. But you have to follow him to find it. It's only he can help you who can help you to see it. The blind will see. And all of a sudden you'll realize it's not a mistake. No, you are perfectly created for it. But you have to let go of these things. On the other hand, some of you are here, you don't think God made a mistake with you. You think God did his best work when it came to you. You know why? You're really good at these things. Listen to me, you have a massive disadvantage.
Because you could spend your whole life living for these things and never actually discover why you're alive. And it's going to be harder for you to give them up. But in order to find this, you have to let go of this. It's going to be harder. Jesus says it this way at one point. He says the worst thing is not just to be blind. No. The worst thing is to be blind and think you can see. At another point, he says this. He said, blessed are the poor, for they shall inherit the kingdom. He's talking about the kingdom, talking about experiencing what we've been talking about. He says, blessed are the poor. He's not talking about, again, what have we said over and over again? When Jesus talks about something physical, he's almost never talking about something physical. He's always talking about something spiritual. What is he talking about? He's saying, blessed are those who realize they can't do it without me. Who are poor in spirit, who understand, no, I can't make it work. Why does he say they're blessed? Because they're the ones who realize, no, my only hope is him. And so Jesus says, I want to show you what it is to be alive. We got to let go of these things so that I can show you this. He says it this way in Matthew chapter 6. He says, but seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. He says, all these other things, you don't worry about those. Let me take care of those. Let me take care of all that other stuff. This is what I want for you to wake up every day orienting your life around. You got to let go of all this. No, all that other stuff, you let go of it. This is what you orient your life around. And if you'll orient your life around this, I can show you why you're alive. There's another point where he says it this way. It's so powerful. He says, then he said to them all, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. He's talking about getting rid of, he says, all those other things, you have to let go of them. All those other things you think life is worth living for. No, you got to let go of those. And then he says this, for whoever wants to save his life will lose it. Whoever's scrambling for those things that they think life is worth living, whoever wants to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for me will save it. He says, but if you let go of those things, I can show you. I can lead you to life. Why you're alive. And then listen to how he continues, because it's so remarkable. What good is it for a man to gain the whole world and yet lose or forfeit his very self? Some of you have gained the whole world. You're that good at this. But you've lost yourself. And you know it. Some of you have gained the whole world. And you have no idea who you are. That one hurts a bit, doesn't it? He says it's possible to gain the whole world, all the things you think life is worth living for, and never actually discover why you're alive. Never actually come alive. And so he says, I want you to orient your life around me. I want you to wake up every morning thinking about one thing, my kingdom, about me. I want you to walk into that workplace thinking about one thing. As you're engaging your family, I want you to wake up every morning and say, what gets you out of bed? There's one thing that should get us out of bed every morning, and it should be him. Orient your life around me, and I can lead you to life. What is it that you've oriented your life around? Are you willing to let go to actually find life? But whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. He says, I want you to wake up every morning thinking about this. You say, that sounds extreme. That sounds extreme. Listen to me. Listen to me. Jesus woke up every morning thinking about how he was going to establish his kingdom and how he was going to make sure you could be part of it. Every morning. And again, he doesn't just tell us something, he lives it. He says, now, you do the same. Because this is how you find life. Will you bow your heads with me? Father, I want to invite you right now, wherever you are, whatever it is that you've oriented your life around, I want to invite you to go to him and just to give that to him, to choose. Now, the passage says it a couple different ways, to die daily. This is not a weekly decision. This is not a yearly. This is a daily decision to come before him and say, no, I'm going to give you what I thought life was worth living for. Because I need to know. I need to know why I'm alive. And I need to hear it from the one who brought me to life. And the one who can teach me what that looks like. I invite you to come to him, give him those, and then to say to him, Jesus, I don't want to just revere you. I don't want to just sing to you. I'm a long ways from it. I want to worship you. I want to worship you. I want for you to be the Lord of my life. I want to worship you with all that I have. I want to be a living sacrifice. I want my entire life to be oriented around you. Father, we come before you, the author and initiator of life. We want to worship you. With all that we have, we want to worship you. In Jesus' name.